Am I not really allowed to say BABIP?
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast, episode 21. This is the Off the Bench crew. I'm your host, Ian Hudson, and I'm an editor at the Dynasty Guru. With me is Keaton O. DeRocher.
Hi.
And Patrick Magnus.
Hello.
So, let's start off. Where can everyone find you guys on the World Wide Webs?
You can find me at the dynastyguru.com. website, writing about baseball and such, and also on Twitter at the Spoken Keats.
And I am at the Green Magnus on Twitter, and you can find me writing at the Dynasty Guru. And I live in Shenzhen, China, which is not really relevant to anything, but it means that my tweets are often when you're sleeping.
Nice pre-pro note for your tweets. All right, so for today's show, we're going to be discussing possible landing spots for the top free agents still out there, going over the first base list that we published on thedynastyguru.com. We're going to be talking about some guys that Keaton and Patrick think are too high or too low, and we're also going to be going over any transactions that have occurred since our last recording. Let's start off with the Miami-St. Louis trade. Keaton, what are your thoughts on Marcell Ozuna being moved?
I like it. I think it's a negligent change in his fantasy value. He'd been showing promise and trending upward with Miami kind of year over year, kept his batted ball profile the same. I actually like the lineup that he's in now. Some of the hitters that are going to be around him, I think there's going to be a lot more people on base for his at-bats now. So that's a plus. Just really kind of confused with what Miami's doing, but I like a piece that they got back in Mag Sierra. I think him having playing time now is actually going to be pretty clutch. He's got a lot of speed and a lot of average, but you know, obviously the main piece for St. Louis trying to compete now is getting Ozuna, and I think in terms of his fantasy value, I think it's actually going to end up being kind of just mirroring what he was doing and the trends that he had going in Miami.
Yeah, I'm in mostly in agreement with Keaton on as far as Ozuna goes. I do think, you know, St. Louis is a potential improvement as far as a ballpark goes. Like, you know, Miami is not exactly hitter's paradise, although Ozuna's really got the power to hit it out anywhere. So I think it might do some good for maybe his OBP. I expect a little bit of a bump being in St. Louis. Maybe it's just because, you know, the Cardinals are a more successful baseball team. But in a similar way, I know we'll talk about Brinson, but like, I'm kind of off with Brinson going to Miami.
I want to get your guys' thoughts on Sandy Alcantara going to Miami. He showed up as the number 75 prospect on our 2018 Dynasty Prospect Top 125 Baseball Rankings put out by Jake Cecil last year. How does the move to Miami affect his value, do you think?
Well, there's a clear path to the rotation because I legitimately sitting here right now cannot think of anybody who is pitching for Miami. Strong strikeout arm. The past 2 years, 2016, 2017, double digit strikeout per nine. So pretty solid power arm. You know, any time that we have guys that were eyeballing that have playing time now, that's always a plus. So the clear path to playing time in Miami certainly does more for his fantasy value than the much more solidified rotation in St. Louis.
Sounds reasonable. Patrick, what do you think?
So I can't say that I know a super ton about Alcantara. I know that he's got a big fastball, and that's about it as far as I know. Like, from what I've thought of him, I've always thought of him as a reliever. I think he'd be like lights out in a reliever role. I'm just not sure he has the effectiveness in his other pitches to be in a rotation. But the dude's 22 years old. I mean, and if Keaton's right, like if he ends up in the rotation, certainly worth a spot on your roster or your watch list. And he's most likely owned in a dynasty league. But if he's not, he's, you know, certainly worth dumping some older veteran if you're not in contention to have on your roster just to see if you, you know, catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, they're going to at least give him a shot to start. So, you know, he has that chance right away. I think I completely agree with you. I think that if he does end up transferring to a bullpen role, that he's going to be a high quality one. So even if you take a shot at him as a starter and it doesn't end up working out, especially if you play in a league with holds and he ends up as a the strong eighth inning guy or ends up, you know, getting to a closer, that's not bad return on your investment if you end up being able to, you know, buy him low.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for the price you're going to pay to acquire him, it's like, why not? I mean, especially if you're picking him up off the waivers. Sorry, but even if he's terrible, like, they're going to keep him on the rotation, like, based on what Miami's doing. Like, you know, Derek Jeter seems to be making it pretty clear, like, they're not trying to win anytime soon. They're totally rebuilding, right? So,
all right, let's move on to the next big move of the offseason, this quiet offseason so far, the Miami-Milwaukee deal. Sent Christian Yelich to the Brewers in exchange for Lewis Brinson, Eason Diaz, Monty Harrison, and Jordan Yamamoto. Patrick, why don't you kick us off? Let's talk about Yelich's value in Milwaukee.
So I've never been a Yelich guy. I always feel like he's somebody that everyone talks about and wants on their team. And I always find myself like passing on him in drafts. But if you go to Miller Park, I'm like immediately interested. You know, I hope that he doesn't make my boy Santana move. I know that there's talks about the Brewers maybe trying to acquire some pitching with a trade through their outfield. But I also think that an outfield of Kane, Yelich, and Santana is pretty freaking awesome. Yeah, in drafts this year, like as far as redraft, I'll be targeting him. It's unlikely like I'll pony up the cash to pay for him. But yeah, I'm in a dynasty, I'm probably not going to acquire him just because of the cost. If you've got if there's a failing team in your league that needs prospects, like, you know, go out and get him. But basically, if you're an owner and you've got Christian Yelich, keep them, enjoy the riches that you're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I share your feelings, Patrick, that Yelich is always one of those guys that I'm not necessarily interested in, but
he's just kind of, I mean, he's, first off, listen to his name. Christian Yelich is a boring ass baseball name, in my opinion. So like,
hashtag analysis. Keaton, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I share Patrick's sentiment about the Milwaukee outfield now. It is quite electric, and it's going to be something to watch. It's going to be interesting to see what they end up doing with Braun, how that ends up playing out. I've always been, I kind of agree with Patrick on this too, that it's just been kind of a mixed evaluation of him. Some people are incredibly high. Some people in our outfield rankings, Jim had Yelich ranked third ahead of Bryce Harper at fifth, which is just kind of bananas to me. Maybe I just need to take a closer look at Yelich, but it seems just kind of like meh kind of deal. I'm not super excited or, you know, super down on him either way. I mean, I guess he's going to be happier there now that he's not playing for Miami. So we'll see what kind of effect that has. Yeah, it's just I kind of feel the same way. It's kind of a mixed bag. It's not a guy that I'm going to reach for. He just kind of is what he is, which is, you know, an upper level outfielder. But to me, not top five, something that I would, you know, spend a lot to get my hands on.
I think a lot of people are going to expect an uptick in his power. And, you know, that's certainly possible, but I don't think he has the launch angle to really. Yeah, his launch angle is like way below league average. And so is his home run distance. So maybe he gets, you know, a bump in home run distance from going to Miller Park. He's got above average generated velocity. So, you know, I do think he's, you know, going to Miller Park, like I said, is a bonus for him. But his launch angle average is 4.84, which is like...
What's the average launch angle? Do we know?
League-wide, it's usually around 10, I believe. So anything... And, you know, 20 seems to be like the ultimate sweet spot. Anywhere between 10 and 20 is good from what I know from the analysis I've done. You know, obviously, you don't want to get too high because then you're looking at pop-up territory.
Wow.
But
sounds like we are not wrong in our evaluation of Yelich. So we spent some time talking about Yelich heading out of town. Let's talk about Miami's return. The headliner, obviously, Lewis Brinson. Very highly rated prospect for as long as I can remember. I think I remember Jason Parks talking about him. Keaton, what are your thoughts on Brinson in Miami?
It's a little concerning that Brinson's been traded twice now, which makes me think that major league teams know something that we don't about his value. I think nobody has ever really questioned the power that he's going to have. But, you know, what else is he going to bring to the table if, you know, teams are shelling out to toss him out there? He's finally going to get, you know, the playing time with the longest leash in the world. They're just going to let him go. But he's definitely worth taking a look at. If a manager who owns him in your league is, you know, putting him out on the block, he's worth taking a peek at. But I don't know if I'd overpay to get him at this point, like, you know, people were probably willing to do a year ago.
I sold all my shares of Brinson that I had. That K rate is too much for me. He strikes out a ton, although he walks a ton. But the fact that most of his offensive numbers were coming in Colorado in the minors, you know, I think there's some inflation there, and I'm just a little nervous about how long it takes for him to adjust to major league pitching. I will say, looking at him, his walk rate is higher than I thought it was last year when he had his brief taste in the majors. I think it's about 11%. And so that gives me some hope, because a big reason for his success in the minors is that walk rate. So he's going to get the playing time in Miami. I think it's going to be a bumpy road. I don't think he's a superstar right off the bat. I think if you've got time to sit, then grab him. But if you're contending, I would say move him. Sell him if you can.
All right. Those were, to my recollection, the only deals so far. Let's move on to some free agent movements. We'll start with the guys who have already signed, and then move on to the remaining big names and see where they might go, where you guys think they will go, their ideal spots, or their more likely spots, if those are different. So we already talked about the Brewers a little bit, and that outfield that's becoming all the more crowded, much to the chagrin of Patrick and his Domingo Santana love. The Brewers have also signed Lorenzo Cain to patrol the outfield. So what do you guys think of Cain's value in Milwaukee?
I think the sure things are that Cain and Yelich are going to play. I mean, I would assume Santana's going to play. I don't know. They can't be done making moves, right? They have way too many outfielders and not enough places to put them. So, I mean, off the bat, I'm concerned with just who actually is going to play and if they're going to keep all these guys and just kind of let them hash it out. But I'm pretty certain Kane's going to play, and I would think the, you know, ballpark change from Kansas City to Milwaukee is going to be a bump for his production. And especially the lineup is way better than the lineup he was dealing with. So if he's going to get on, someone's going to hit him in. So as long as he's playing and they figure out their outfield sitch, I feel pretty confident that Kane's going to be a pretty nice play in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that signing was really weird to me. And I was really angry because, yeah, I thought immediately it was going to mean a trade of Santana, most likely. You know, because they moved Brinson. Didn't they move Brinson and acquire Kane on the same day?
Yeah, they got Yelich and like 2 hours later signed Kane.
You know, that was obviously, you know, it seems like a very strategic move, right? So they moved a piece of their outfield depth and then acquired Kane, who is, I think, in his early 30s, and most of his game is made up in his speed. It seemed like an odd, really odd move. Like, it's clear that they're really going for it. I, for one, really just want that outfield to stay the way it is and don't move Santana. You know, you'll figure out your rotation. Nobody's going to be able to pitch in Milwaukee anyways. Everybody sucks. If Giovanni Gallardo can't do it, nobody can do it. Well, that's probably not true.
Let's move on to everyone's favorite topic, relief pitchers in Colorado. Wade Davis signing with the Rockies. Generally, no one wants to deal with pitchers in Colorado, but Wade Davis is one of the better closers in the league. How does the move to Colorado affect his value in as much as you worry about closer value?
I'm not worried about him really at all in Colorado. The pitchers that we typically see struggle there are the more finesse pitchers, and you know, Wade is a strong power pitcher. He's too elite of a closer to take a step back that's dramatic enough to knock him out of the top, I don't know, five closers for me. He's still a top five closer, even in Colorado. I'm not worried about it at all.
All right, Patrick?
I don't have a ton of thoughts on it concerning fantasy. Like, you know, go get Wade Davis. He's a closer. He's closing for a Major League Baseball team. He's been successful in the past. He's got a good K rate. Like, go get him. I'm more like, what are the Rockies doing? Why are you spending that money on Wade Davis? Like, I don't understand why teams are still doing this. Like, I'm more like in line with like the model of, say, like Seattle, who, like, you know, pick up David Phelps, like a failed starter. And I know Wade Davis was a failed starter, but David Phelps is a lot cheaper than Wade Davis, right? So, like, take your failed pitching prospects, move them into your bullpen. But I will say, they've put together a pretty nasty bullpen with Ottavino, McGee, Davis. Like, it seems like they're up to something and maybe trying to shorten the game and shorten how much of a look that batters get at their pitchers because, well, it's Colorado.
I think that might be the way to go in Colorado is to try and shorten the game because if the starters only have to go 5 instead of 6 while pitching in Colorado, I think that actually makes a pretty big difference. So I think you're onto something there with that thought. That's a pretty good point. And they have one of the stronger bullpens going right now, and that may be exactly what they're going to do, and I'm actually pretty excited to watch that play out.
That brings up an interesting point. I know that we said we want to stay away. We generally try to stay away from starting pitchers in Colorado, but in as much as you buy in on those guys, if the Rockies are building up a nasty bullpen to shorten the game, if your league plays in quality starts or innings, that is a consideration for picking up pitchers in Colorado more so than your already valid concerns.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I mean, it's something to keep an eye on, right? You obviously can't go into your drafts or like approach this season like changing your strategy on Colorado pitchers, and if you have one, good for you, because mine is just basically avoid them. But just keep an eye on it, and it might be an opportunity for those bullpen arms. Like, they'll help your ratios.
Right. Yeah, that's a good call. This stuff is enough to be a tiebreaker among, you know, if you're deciding between, you know, Kyle Freeland and someone else, or Wade Davis and somebody else. These factors could be a tiebreaker for you, but I don't think they should be the deciding factor. All right, let's move on to the New York Metropolitans and the ageless Adrian Gonzalez. Anyone have any strong thoughts or feelings about him?
God. Just why?
I have one theory, and it was because they signed him to a one-year deal at the major league minimum. They don't think Dom Smith is ready and needs a bit more seasoning and can learn behind Gonzalez. You know, he still is a smart baseball player and can, you know, bring a strong veteran presence to a clubhouse. He's got nothing left. I don't.
He's boring as heck, and I would much rather than be playing Dominic Smith every day. Like, let him play every day and see what he can do. He doesn't have anything left to prove at the minor league level. I mean, there could be something to that, Keaton, but
that's the only thing I can think of.
I think that clears up all the major Adrian Gonzalez, major free agents that have signed. Let's move on to some of the guys still out there. JD Martinez is a name that I think is surprisingly still out on the free agent market. Keaton, where do you think JD is going to end up?
I think the best spot for his fantasy value is in Boston. And I say that because it's not only for his fantasy value, it's for the other bats in the lineup. Beyond just him being an incredibly exciting option in Fenway Park, the fantasy value of guys like Bogarts and Betts, I think, also rises because we saw what they were able to do with some production or some protection in the lineup in 2016 in Ortiz's final year. And then last year, both of them in particular were trying to do too much and really kind of struggled at the plate and had major step backs. If they don't have to try so hard and do so much, and they have a bat like JD Martinez who could, in the blink of an eye, send one probably to New Hampshire, they can just kind of play their games and let it play out, and I think they'd be able to easily replicate what happened in 2016. So not only for his pure fantasy value of just rocketing balls off the Green Monster and just all over the place in the shoebox of Fenway Park, I like Boston as a landing spot for what he'd be able to bring to the rest of the lineup as well.
Keats, if JD were to sign with Boston, who takes a seat there? I mean, we've got Betts, JBJ, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Andrew Benetton. So who's taking a seat when JD shows up?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it ends up being Jackie Bradley that gets moved, and then they move Benintendi to center. They've been holding strong that they're not going to trade JBJ, but I don't really see. I mean, he has enough value that they can get something back for him. But I don't think that would be acquiring Martinez unless they moved him to DH, which, to be honest, I would be okay with, and then just split Moreland and Hanley at first. I know that it said he doesn't really want to play DH, So he wants to play, well, he would play DH, but he also wants to play the field. My gut would tell me that they would put him in the outfield and they would end up doing a corresponding move with Jackie Bradley Jr. But I guess they could make it work if they wanted to keep him and have him DH.
All right. Patrick, any thoughts on JD?
I mean, obviously every bat in a dream scenario ends up in Colorado, but probably not going to happen, you know, since they're too busy spending money on Wade Davis and all. You know, I think he ends up in Boston, but Arizona is another nice fit for him. You know, he went there and mashed last year, and I would kind of like to see him back there. You know, I'm a Sox fan too, and would love to have him on our team, like I own the freaking team. I'm just a fan. But I'd like to see him on the Red Sox, probably as a DH. The signing of Mitch Moreland kind of screws that up because Hanley's my favorite player, and I want Hanley in the lineup every single day. But if JD, I think that Keaton's right that if JD does sign with Boston, that they probably play him in the outfield and JBJ gets moved. I don't want that to happen, but it's a possibility. But I think you know, there's rumors of Arizona being a contender, and I'd certainly be happy for him to sign there.
As a Rays fan, I am tired of AL East teams signing monster free agents, so I am anti JD Martinez in Boston. All right, let's move on to the pitching side of things. Actually, you know what? Let's stick with hitting for a little bit longer and move to Eric Hosmer. Where do we think he's going to go? Patrick, let's start with you.
I guess you know, the last rumor I heard is San Diego, right? I think San Diego would be a good fit for him. That means Myers probably ends up in the outfield. So I mean, that's a better fit for San Diego than it is for Hosmer. But Hosmer's game is really getting on base anyways. So, you know, I think he's going to play well wherever he is. He's not like a super power threat. So wherever his bat goes, I'm fine with. Like I said, the dream is Colorado. Everybody ends up in Colorado. But I think it would be interesting to see him in San Diego. It's not the, you know, pitcher's park it once was. And I think it would be cool if Myers was in the outfield, honestly.
I hate his profile at Petco. I really don't want to see him go to San Diego. In terms of his fantasy profile, I think it's great if he just stays in Kansas City. The park is too big in San Diego to really kind of bring the power back. I think he honestly might drop down below 20 if he ends up in San Diego. I just don't like that feel there at all.
It's understandable. Let's move on to the other side of the plate here. Let's talk about the big free agent pitchers. Right now, we've really only got, apologies to my boy Alex Cobb, but the big names right now are Yu Darvish and Jake Arrieta. It seems like anyone who's looking for a pitcher is in the market for either of these guys. So where do we think that they're going to go?
I would like to see Darvish in Milwaukee. If the Brewers are able to add Darvish to their rotation, that would do just wonders for the value of that team. Might actually pick them to beat the Cubs and finish first in the division. Just, they've been incredibly exciting.
What?
Yeah, I think I would, man. I think I would.
That is the hottest of hot takes, dude.
I mean,
very toasty take. I like it.
All right. No, okay, I'll go with toasty. Hottest. I don't know. I feel like we've heard hotter, but
Fine. Toasty
I'll accept. So I would like to see him end up in Milwaukee just for that reason and just how awesome that team would end up being. I think that his stuff will play there for sure. I mean, he struggled in his less than half a season in L.A., which I think is also one of the other rumored landing spots for him. But between the two, I think my preference for his fantasy value would to end up in Milwaukee. And then Arrieta, I hope that he ends up with the Nationals, because I think adding him to Strasburg and the other pieces that they have there would give them a solid enough rotation that they could make a deeper run in the playoffs with a healthy Bryce Harper. So for his fantasy value, I hope that Arrieta ends up in Washington.
I agree mostly. I actually don't want you in, I mean, as far as like enjoying the Brewers, I agree with you, Keaton, that I'd like to see you there, because like that team is gonna be fun, not like beat the Cubs fun, but really fun team to watch. I would, for his fantasy value, I think that I'd rather see him in LA. I think I'd rather see him back with the Dodgers, and they got that cash. Like, they can throw money at him. I know Milwaukee's going for it, but I don't necessarily know that Yu is the best use of their money. I've never been a huge Darvish fan to begin with. Like, he walks too many batters for me.
That slider, though.
Yeah, that slider, though.
All right. Let's move on to some analysis of the top 50 fantasy first baseman that we put out at the dynastyguru.com lists 1 through 20 and 21 through 50. In talking about it, we Keaton and Patrick both went through and found some guys that they thought were too high or too low in the different tiers. So let's kick it off with the 1 through 10. Keaton, tell me why Matt Olson at number 8 is too low and Will Myers at number 6 is too high.
Yeah, so my too high and too low actually go hand in hand, and I'll admit, Patrick turned me. I was trying to avoid looking at Matt Olson just because I know Patrick loves Matt Olson more than probably his family.
Oh, yeah, dude, that's easy.
Yeah, after taking a look at his numbers, because I was struggling to find someone, I mean, I was relatively okay with everything we had in the top 10, but after looking at his numbers, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too. So
Get Matt right on Olson, this train, dude.
I think we need to flip Matt Olson and Will Myers, because I looked at their Olson's numbers and they are literally identical to Will Myers' numbers, with the exception that Olson has a better OBP and will hit more home runs and is 23 years old. So to me, that's a dynasty stud right there. And for the production and the age being almost, the age isn't identical, but production being just about identical with a slight edge to Olson, and Olson being much younger in terms of a dynasty format, I think Olson should be at number 6 and Myers should be at number 8.
Patrick, sounds like you've convinced Keaton for the Matt Olson love. Why don't you expound on that a little bit?
Oh, no, man. What is there not to say about this man? He's 23, was a first-round pick, super strong OBP skills. Like, you know, I see a player that knows the strike zone, and I feel like they are a safer asset than someone that doesn't. And so when I see someone that has had a consistent walk rate suddenly be able to hit for power, I'm very much interested. And not only does I don't think the home runs are a fluke. Like, looking at his exit velocity, looking at his launch angle, I think it's legit. The biggest concern would be him taking on left-handers. He has got to figure out left-handed pitching. But even if he ends up as a platoon bat, you know, he's the stronger part of that platoon. And if Jake Lamb has value, then Matt Olson certainly has value. I don't know if I would say I would flip Myers and Olson, which I know might come as a surprise to Keaton over there, but only because I don't know if you'll notice, Keaton, did you notice how well written number 1 through 10 was on that list?
Very, very well written.
Yeah, well edited too, I thought.
Yeah, pretty well.
Could have been better.
What was that, Keaton? I didn't hear what you said.
I said the editing could have been a little bit better.
Oh, weird. Keaton's feed just dropped out. I guess it's just you and me, Patrick, for the rest of the show. Huh. Interesting. Anyway.
Well, hold on. I got one more thing on Matt Olson. So I don't think that I agree with Patrick that none of it was a fluke. The only part that was a fluke was his BABIP, which was 238 last year. There's no way it stays that low again. That can't be where it's going to sit. I mean, that's going to improve by at least 40 to 50 points. And Olson's going to become a much more incredibly exciting option than he already is.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on that and just say, Keaton, don't you know that, like, it's not cool to cite BABIP as any way of, like, anything anymore? You can't say BABIP in the fantasy community anymore. You just can't say the words BABIP and regression at all. Do you know that?
Nope. But I don't play by your conformist rules.
All right. Anyways, part about Myers is he's the only other player in the top 10 that offers like speed of Paul Goldschmidt. So, you know, and like looking at his profile, like, yeah, he's never going to hit for average, but the dude knows how to take a walk. So probably realistically, you know, for people that are not me, I would say go get, you know, Hosmer, or rather, sorry, Myers, same thing. But I think I would trust Myers over Olsen, but I do love Matt Olsen, and if you can get him anywhere for cheap, go freaking get him.
How am I now the high guy on Olsen? How did that happen?
You're not the high guy on Olsen. I will forever, like, the heart wants what it wants, Keaton.
Apparently I want it more, though. I don't get it.
Okay, we're going to have to spin this off into our Matt Olsen Love Fest podcast. Let's, for our purposes, we'll move on here. Let's move on to the 11 through 20 tier. Keaton, I think you and a lot of the community, I feel like Greg Bird coming in at number 11 is a bit of a divisive figure. Either everyone loves him or hates him. You seem to hate him. So tell me about that.
Well, honestly, it wasn't much of a hate. It was actually the exact same note that Patrick had from the pre-show that I would flip him and Bell, because I like Josh Bell and what his, you know, his profile is, and playing in Pittsburgh more than, I mean, the most attractive thing that Bird has going for him is that he's a left-handed power hitter in Yankee Stadium. And to me, I feel like that's kind of the extent of it. I mean, he's 25 years old, but just for the package that Bell brings to the table, who's also a power hitter, but I think much better in average and just more reliable. And especially with the injury concerns that Bird has brought to the table the past couple of years, I would take Bell over Bird. So I'm curious to see if Patrick has kind of the similar notes on that.
So, yeah, I am taking Bell over Bird just because, first off, Bell has proven it, right? Like, he's still young and he is in the majors and being successful, whereas Greg Bird is mostly just hype, right? This dude's 25 years old. And it's, you know, it's 11 versus 12 as far as rankings go, right? So it's not a significant difference. I can't say that I hate Bird enough to like put him down, you know, too much further on this list. Maybe I knock him down like right below Carlos Santana at 17. So maybe he ends up like in the 18 range for me. But like, I do see this, the upside that everybody's into, like that dude's got a bat and he's got an eye. Like, he's shown consistently strong walk rates throughout his minor league career, with a pretty good ISO, even though like he's, you know, facing more advanced pitching. So I do get the hype, but he's been super injury prone. It hasn't proven it yet. Like, 11 seems way too high for me.
Yeah, I'm taking Bell's on base ability over Bird's power in Yankee Stadium for sure.
All right. Well, this is kind of interesting. We've got Greg Bird at 11, Josh Bell at 12. You were talking about flipping those guys, but you also have Matt Carpenter at 15. Keaton, you think he's too low. Talk about him a little bit, and would he be in the conversation of moving up towards the Greg Bird, Josh Bell area?
Yeah, I think people were turned off just because he had a, you know, kind of a downish year where he hit just shy of 280. Because that wasn't his typical, you know, he had a run of a couple seasons where he was 325, almost 330. And I think people were shocked at that drop, and they're kind of down on him because of that drop. But, I mean, upper 270s, 280s, that's not a bad average. And all the other tertiary stat lines stayed relatively the same. So he's 32 now, I believe. But he's still incredibly reliable. So I was surprised that we had him at 15, and I would take him over probably Justin Smoke and Ryan Zimmerman both.
Yeah, I so when I first saw this, I was like, nah, man, he's in the perfect spot. And was actually down on him as well because of the last year. But like you're saying, if you like really dig into the stats, like, not much has changed in like his batted ball profile or his plate discipline as far as like his O swing, Z swing, like all that stuff is really close to his career norms. So, you know, 32, yeah, he's an older first baseman, and, you know, he's going to hit, what, maybe 20 home runs? Certainly, if you're in an OBP league, you want him, like, because even though I think he batted, like, something like 240 last year, his OBP was still, like, 380, and that's Joe Mauer-level plate discipline good. And, Keaton, you know how I feel about Joe Mauer. I mean, maybe the world doesn't. He's not, you know, Matt Olson, but I love Joe Mauer.
Yeah, they're about to find out how you feel about Joe Mauer.
Pro-level transition to the 21 through 50 range. Keaton, you and Patrick both apparently have some thoughts on Joe Mauer at 33. So let's hear them.
So I think that we should probably have Joe Mauer closer to where we have, certainly above Chris Davis at 22, right? He's definitely got to be above Chris Davis at 22. And let me tell you why. It's not because he's going to give you RBIs, but if you're in an OBP league or an average league, frankly, right, he's going to bat around 300. His OBP is probably going to be somewhere in the 360 range. And that Twins offense is actually okay and getting better. And, you know, I expect Mauer to be at the top of that lineup. So I would say he'll provide you good OBP, good average, and runs scored. Now, in a dynasty format, is that something you want to acquire for the long haul? Is he going to be your cornerstone at first base? No. But he could be a plug, or he could be your corner infielder if you need one, which he is in a couple of my leagues.
Okay, so Patrick, you think Joe Mauer should be up towards the early part of the 20s with Chris Davis at 22. Keaton, you think Joe Mauer at 33 is already too high. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I'd put him like low 30s, maybe even at number 40, for actually the exact same argument that Patrick just made. He's a one-trick pony with average and OBP. I don't even think he's going to be actually getting the runs. I mean, he's going to get on base sure, and the Twins lineup is interesting, but I don't think the runs are going to be anything real crazy. But I would rather take a chance on some younger guys that are behind him that have the ability to contribute in more than just one category. And he's 34 years old, so I don't think his dynasty value is just there anymore.
All right, let's talk about Ronald Guzman, the prospect with the Texans, or the Rangers. Texans, great. Rangers first base prospect. Patrick, you think he's too high at 29? Why don't you tell me about that?
Guzman, to me, is your classic sort of prospect that you acquire and deal. He's close to the majors. He's putting up decent numbers in the minor leagues, but he's got no pop. And if you're the kind of guy, say, like, you know, Keaton, who doesn't appreciate the beauty that is Joe Mauer, then you probably don't need to own Guzman. Like, what is he going to realistically really do for you? I know, like, he's shown plate skills at the minor league level, and Texas is not a bad place to hit. To me, though, like, without that pop, despite his proximity to the majors, I'm out. I think you can sell him in a deal and get something back from him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about no power. Looking at his line here, got a nice round 16 homers in 2016, and he's had double digits the last 3 years. Honestly, looking at his line, it looks identical to Brandon Belt, which in terms of first baseman is bland. I mean, he'll do some stuff for you, but it's not going to be exciting. Is then I think you know, Patrick hit it on the head. Like he's not a guy that I would run out to get, but he's certainly a decent trade chip.
Okay. Well, we've got him at 29 right now. Let's hear where you guys would have him. Keaton?
I don't know. 29 seems okay.
No, it's not okay. I would absolutely not have him at 29. I'm probably dropping him below Joe Mauer at 33. So right in between Joe Mauer and Matt Adams. Because my boy there, Halen Ortiz. Let's just get that butcherment right out of the way. We have him at 31. And that dude, you want to talk about power, is that is a big, beefy boy with a big bat who should be higher on this list, in my opinion. I probably put him up near, probably right above Bobby Bradley at 26, right below Dominic Smith. So I probably rank him 26 and bump Bobby Bradley down to 27.
Keaton, you got any thoughts on Hylan Ortiz?
I do, but it was everything that Patrick just said, so I agree with that.
Keaton, I thought you have some thoughts on Yonder Alonso being too high at 23. He had such a hot start in Oakland. I know that I bought in on him early on, and that was a mistake. But what do you think?
Yeah, he has nowhere to play in Seattle, so I don't really know why we would even have him in the top 25, to be honest. And it's not like he's waiting in the wings behind somebody going to get a bunch of at-bats. I mean, they have Nelson Cruz at DH who's going to play every game at DH. They have Ryan Healy at first. I just don't see how Alonso fits in the lineup at all. And we're talking, you know, dynasty rankings here for the next 3 to 5 years. And I mean, he's had one good year, two-ish, and now has nowhere to play. So for me, I mean, he's just completely off my board.
I can see that. Patrick, you got any thoughts on Alonso there?
Yeah, my thoughts are, what happened to Dan Vogelbach, dude? Why did that guy never get a chance to play? Seattle just hates him? Like, he came up and wasn't that bad.
I'm still a Vogie truther. I think he's going to have his shot sometime this year, get some sprinkled playing time in. I want to believe in Vogelbach.
I mean, he came up, and I think, which is something that he's done pretty much at every level, he just struck out a lot. But I mean, for a guy that was just getting his cups of coffee, and striking out is just something that happens to guys when they get up to the majors and they're facing major league caliber pitching. So give him a chance to transition. I mean, he's probably still going to have a high strikeout rate, probably, you know, upper 20s, but he can produce, I would think. I mean, I'm also surprised that they just kind of completely shut him off. Now he's even further, because you have to imagine that he's probably behind Alonso.
I don't understand. Like, I'm with you on Alonso. Like, I've been looking at his stuff too, like the his average home run and launch angle are below league average, I believe. I'm just not a believer. Like, he popped up last year, had a good like brief run, and then sort of faded, right? He's playing in Seattle. I mean, I know Oakland's not a great place to hit either, but I'm not buying it. I'd rather own my Vogelbach share and die with it.
I'm with you there. Rounding out.
Speaking of high quality first basemen that are blocked, how about Edwin Rios?
How about Edwin Rios? Man, you guys are on point with the transitions here. Keaton, you've got Edwin Rios at, we've got him at 44, and you think he's too low there.
Yeah.
Where do you think he should be and why?
He's top 30 for me. I mean, the dude just mashes. He's, you know, hits around 300. He's got the ability to pop 30 homers at the major league level. I mean, that bat's just going to play. It's just, are they going to be able to finally get him in the lineup there in L.A.? I believe he's 24 now coming into this season. And, I mean, he's ready. He's major league ready. And I'd like to see him getting that bat, because his numbers are very, very pretty.
Patrick?
I'd never even heard of this dude until I saw him on the pre-show notes and just looked him up just because I was interested in. Goodness gracious, are you right? Like, his numbers at least say that he is definitely major league ready. Quite an uptick in his power once reaching the PCL, obviously. Well, he did hit 15 home runs when he was in Double A, so yeah, I mean, I think I'm just with you all around, but like, does he get a shot to play? Because honestly, I think that he's blocked and not going to have room to play. So unless he's getting moved, he's probably just depth for them, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's systematically lowered his K rate as he's progressed through the minor leagues, and it's now at about 20. And his walk rate, he almost doubled to 9.5 last year. So he's making the adjustments necessary as he moves up, facing increasingly more difficult competition. And the dude's just ready. And they need to find a place for him to get his bat in the lineup.
Well, consider me now on the Rios bandwagon, the Edwin Rios bandwagon, because I'm in, dude. I'm with you. Let's start this train up.
Well, I think that's plenty of talk about first baseman for anyone's lifetime. This has been the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I've been your host, Ian Hudson. You can find my influence at thedynastyguru.com in about 75% of the articles there as an editor. And you can find me on Twitter at USF Hudson. I basically just retweet No Context, The Good Place. The most recent thing I've written was a write-up of our draft results for the Dynasty Guru Experts League Part 2. It's a 20-team, 5x5 head-to-head league where we've replaced average with OBP and replaced saves with saves and holds due to the depth of the league. My write-up is of the first two rounds that also includes an analysis from each of the guys on their invisible hand strategy. If you are a regular reader of the site, you'll know that last year, or the previous iteration of the Experts League, was an invisible hand process to determine draft order, whereby owner would bid keeper slots in order to obtain the proper draft pick. For example, in this league, Brady Childs bid an astounding 29 keeper slots for the opportunity to bid first overall. So in a 40-man roster league, he will be able to keep 11 guys next year, one of which being Mike Trout. And like I said, in the write-up, all the guys talk about their draft strategy in addition to their invisible hand strategy. So I would recommend popping over there and taking a look. There's some good analysis over there. As for my co-hosts here, you can find Keaton DeRocher at The Spoken Keats and Patrick Magnus at The Green Magnus on Twitter. And guys, what have you written recently on thedynastyguru.com?
Well, Keaton and I actually just collaborated on a piece. We are working with Adam Lawler, which has, he has an incredible name. One thing I've discovered about working at the Dynasty Guru is that I really love baseball names. I really love names in general. Anyways, my point being is we have started an article called The Triple Play, where we are going through each Major League Baseball team and taking a look at a pitcher, a hitter, and a prospect. And we are rotating who does the analysis on that, but strongly recommend. We recently, you know, the Arizona piece is up. I just finished up writing the Atlanta piece, and that will be posted soon. So go check that out.
Keaton, anything to add?
Yeah, I wrote a wonderful piece about Austin Barnes.
Matt Olson is to Patrick Magnus as Austin Barnes is to Keaton DeRocher, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. But yeah, so I wrote a fantastic piece on Barnes. You should check that out. I've also contributed on the catcher comments and the second base comments with some lovely haikus. And I'm contributing to the Triple Play series, which I'm pretty excited about. So that's where you can go read my words.
For sure. You guys want to head on over to thedynastyguru.com. We've got a bunch of stuff planned for this upcoming season in the year, expanding our coverage across the major sports and going more in depth, if that's somehow possible, on our baseball coverage. So that's going to do it for us. Y'all have a good day, and as always, stay gold.